Today we want to continue our series in the book of Ruth. It is Ruth, a story of God's faithfulness. And the message today is titled, It Just Happened. And we're going to be reading through the entire second chapter. And if you remember last week, I talked about how the print in my Bible gets smaller every year. Man, this is sad. Now I can read. Now, it's amazing, but the glasses really do help. I can read this, but when the glasses are down, they're not prescription or anything, they're just reading glasses. I went down to Costco and got them, and it makes a difference. It really does. So I can read without guessing at some of the words, so on Thursday night I may have to wear them as well. But I will read for you from the second chapter of the book of Ruth. And you can follow along your Bibles if you want. You can just sit there and listen to it. But I am going to read the whole chapter, so here we go. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I did not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed is the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth, the Moabitess, said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. It was July 1st, 1885, when Edward Kimball felt the tugging of the Spirit to share his faith with a young shoe salesman that he knew. At first, Kimball kind of vacillated, unsure if he should talk to the man or not, but finally, he mustered his courage and he went into the shoe store. There, Kimball found the salesman in the back room stocking shoes, and he began to share his faith with him. As a result, the young shoe salesman prayed and received Jesus Christ on that day. That shoe salesman was named Dwight Lyman Moody, and he became the greatest evangelist of his generation. In 1979, while Moody was preaching in England, the heart of a pastor whose name was F.B. Meyer was set on fire, and Meyer later came to America, to an American college campus, to preach. And under his preaching, under Meyer's preaching, a student by the name of Wilbur Chapman was saved. Now, Wilbur Chapman, he engaged in YMCA work, and he employed a former baseball player by the name of Billy Sunday to help him do his evangelistic work. Billy Sunday then kind of went on his own, and he held a revival in Charlotte, North Carolina. Because the revival stirred up the hearts of so many, some 30 businessmen wanted to devote a day of prayer for Charlotte. And in May of 1934, a farmer lent the men some land to use for their prayer meeting. The leader of the businessmen, whose name was Vernon Patterson, prayed that out of Charlotte, the Lord would raise up someone to preach the gospel to the ends of the earth. The businessmen then called for another evangelistic meeting, and they asked Mordecai Ham, who was a fiery southern evangelist, to come, and he shattered the complacency of church-going Charlotte. The farmer who lent his land for the prayer meeting was Franklin Graham. And on one of the last nights under the big tent, one tall, lanky young man walked up the aisle to receive Christ. That young man's name was Billy Graham. All I could say is, wow, what a coincidence. Who would have ever dreamed or imagined that because a Sunday school teacher told a young man about Jesus, that it would turn out the likes of Billy Graham? Now, is that luck or what? If that isn't fate, I don't know what else is. What else could it be? How about your life? Are there a series of events in your life that may appear as luck or chance? I want to give you a couple seconds to think about it, because I'd like to hear from you. Here's an example. A few weeks ago, I was going from the west side over to the east side, and I was going to go look at a job for somebody. And I was driving, and I keyed the address in on my GPS, and I knew roughly where the house was at, and I keyed the address in my GPS, and I'm driving, and my GPS keeps telling me, okay, left turn here, and I'm going straight. I'm ignoring my GPS. I'm going to go this way. And it says to turn, and I go straight, and it says to turn, and I go straight. And so I'm totally ignoring my GPS, and she's getting mad at me. She keeps going, recalculating route, and stuff. But somehow I'm not listening to the GPS. I'm just going kind of the way that I'm going. And so I'm driving, and I come up to a stop sign, and I pull up at the stop sign. And it just so happens, I look over in this park that's over on the other side of the stop sign across the street. There's a park, and there's a basketball court. And I look, and lo and behold, Frankie and Brandon and John Edward are there. So, you know, I kind of honk my horn, and they look and they wave, and I pull over and stop and talk to them. Come to find out that they don't normally play basketball there. They usually play over in this area, but somehow they ended up over on that side. You see, that's chance. That's just a coincidence that I happen to not be listening to my GPS and just driving somewhere, and they happen to decide to play basketball somewhere else than they normally do. See, that is chance or coincidence or luck. Do any of you have a story, something like that that has happened to you that you would like to share with us? Anybody? Okay, now you have to talk into here because we're getting it recorded on there.
I kind of... That don't say enough.
It's on, go ahead.
Hello?
It's on.
Hello. I knew something he was going to say in church today, and I made it. And I kind of feel like I could predict it. That was interesting.
Okay. That's all I got to say. Cool. Very good. Okay, Ann?
The other Ann?
Yeah.
I was making spaghetti ahead of time, and Ashley's favorite food is spaghetti, and I had already started making it before I knew she was going to be coming to my house that day.
Cool. Very good. Anyone else? Letters A, if not, then we'll move on to B's because apparently we're doing them in alphabetical order. Okay, now we're down to J's. Okay, Jim. Now, you...
Okay, this is a story about not witnessing, but about me changing careers. I've been a radio television repairer for, 10 years or so, and got burned out on that. Maybe burnout is a good way to say it, yeah. I got burned out on that. Stopped doing that for about 3 years, and then it became necessary to and I wasn't working, it became necessary to look for a job. So I went and to the state employment office, and they arranged for an interview to go to a place to calibrate some equipment, test equipment, calibrate test equipment. I was driving to the appointment, and I was going past where ITT school was. My brother Marvin was going there, so I was familiar with that. I had pre-told by people who went there that if I ever got tired of fixing electronic equipment, that they were looking for teachers. So I felt this really strong impulse to pull in there, so I did. And pulled in the parking lot, went in to where the receptionist desk was, and said to the receptionist, I want to apply for a job. I still wasn't very convinced that I was doing, that I wasn't doing something stupid. In the back of my mind, I was going, this is crazy. And I'm going to miss my appointment for my job interview. So I wanted to hurry things up. So she said, okay, I'll go get you an application. And I said, no, I don't want to fill out an application. I want to have an interview today. And she said, oh, okay, let me talk to somebody. And so she did. She talked to the assistant dean, and he said, sure. So she sent me back to meet him. I sat down, and we talked a little bit. And I said, hey, is it possible? I mean, I've never studied anything about teaching. I don't know anything about being a teacher. I didn't say this, but I'm thinking, I don't know what I'm doing here. But what I said, I want to know from you is if I know I just dropped in, so you're not hiring anybody, but if you wanted to hire somebody with my background as a technician, could you hire me? And he said, yeah, there's a deal with the state where we can get a provisional license for technical fields, and yeah, I could hire you. And so we talked a little bit more, and he said, well, listen, we're not hiring right now, but we will be in about 3 months. Actually, we will be in about a month. And so he said, if you're interested, leave your contact information and we'll be in touch. So, and he introduced me to another person that was a teacher, and we went on a tour of the school. And that took about an hour, so obviously I missed my appointment for being calibrator of test equipment. But when I left, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. Now, the crazy thing about it is, a week before, if you'd asked me a week before, what would you think about being a teacher? I would have said, you're crazy. I don't know anything about teaching. I have no interest in being a teacher. From that, it took a little while, but I got hired as a teacher, and I have been a teacher ever since then. That was in 1983. And I never had the slightest idea that I would be good at being a teacher, but God led me into a career that was, I'm going to say, the most satisfying career I could have ever chosen.
All right, anyone else? Okay. Way in the back. I'll get over there for you, at least close. Okay.
I lived in Las Vegas for a while, and I did some work with Youth with a Mission, and we needed like $7,000 a week before we were supposed to go to Egypt, and we're like, okay, and we like tapped every resource we had. We like called everybody we knew, and then all of a sudden my base director got a phone call from one of his friends and was like, just chat on the phone. They hung up, and then the guy called back and goes, oh, by the way, do you guys need any money for an outreach or anything? He's like, yeah, we need about $7,000. He's like, oh, let me see what I can do. So he just dropped us a check for $7,000 and didn't expect us to pay it back or anything. It was pretty cool. So we went to Egypt, and Egypt is like a blacklisted country, but it's weird. You're allowed to be a Christian, but you're not allowed to tell anybody about Christ. So it's really weird. We didn't know how we were supposed to evangelize there. So we just prayed a lot, like walked through the city of Cairo and just prayed like a lot. And we're like, why are we praying so much? And like right before we left, one of our contacts said that they were allowed to have an evangelistic crusade for the first time ever in the history of that country, like a month after we left. So we always, like maybe we planted some seeds or something like that, but it's kind of cool. So,
all right, very good. Anyone else? Okay.
Well, this is a kind of a coincidence on how I ended up here. When my daughter Sarah was in high school in Milwaukee, which was probably about a freshman or a sophomore, they had a whole program on Black History Month. And there was a group that came and performed that just one person in particular really, really impressed me. And even though I couldn't remember what his name was, he just never left my mind. And about 3 years later, the choir director at Milwaukee called me and said, you know, I have this good friend, and they really need somebody to play the piano for their church service for Easter Sunday. Well, every year for like the last 10 years, my family had gone to Medford to visit grandma for Easter, and for whatever bizarre reason, we didn't go that year. And I said, yeah, sure, I can play it. And the minute he asked me, I knew in my mind that it was this same man, and I walked into Sycamore Church, where Pastor Frank and a number of people are, and here was Daryl Dixon, and that was the man that had been in that Black History program that just had really stuck in my mind. Well, then through the course of that, my sister Vicky that moved to Houston and all of her family, they really wanted to, for once, just attend the same church that I was, where we could all be together, so they started attending out there. And that was a long ways for them to go. And after a year or so, they decided they really wanted to find somewhere closer to home because they live over here. And they said, you know, I think there's a Church of God down the street from the house. Well, it's this church. And they started coming here. And so when Sycamore then was deciding that it was time to close the doors, then I wanted to be where my family was, and it was here. So out of a series of coincidences that started many years before with a man that I had never met before in my life, that's how I ended up here.
Cool. You know, now that you mentioned your story, I might as well mention mine. About a couple years back, I had just graduated from Warner, and I was searching for a church, and For a while, I had been attending a different church, trying to get involved, asking people, you know, if I could help out here, if I could help out there, if there was anything that I could do. And they kept on saying, oh, you should go talk to so-and-so. And I'd talk with so-and-so, and they'd say, oh, you need to go talk to so-and-so. And so I went around and around for a while, and ooh, yeah. This mic has a relationship with me. Anyway, I remember just for a chance, my academic advisor was there teaching a class, and I went and I met with him, and he intentionally missed his church service to talk with me. And I remember saying, I don't feel like things are working here. I don't feel like I'm being enabled to do very much here, and I really don't know where to go. And it was like the light had clicked on in his brain. He said, well, have you gone over to Richmond recently? And this was back when Jeff had just started here. And he said, well, you know, they have a 30-year-old pastor that just started over there, and you might really hit it off well over there. You might try it out. And so I remember walking in the doors, and I remember everyone greeting me here and welcoming me here. And then I met Pastor Jeff, and I didn't walk out the doors before I had a lunch invite from him. It's through the connections here, through the involvement here, that I feel like I'm home every time I walk in the doors, and everyone's here, obviously. So I just wanted to share that.
Now,
what? Very general. In February or March of 1969, we moved to Guam, and then in the early 70s, this guy moved to Guam as well, and he's from Chicago, or born in the States, and here I am from the Philippines, who you would have never known, you know, we'd end up on Guam, and then Val would end up on Guam, and then many, many years later in 1984, we got married. So that's, I don't know if that's chance or that's faith or whatever, but I praise God for that.
Okay. All right, I'll carry that one back a little bit farther. You can go back to the end of the war. This guy is in the military, and he is serving on the island of Guam. And God puts it on his heart that he needs to, once the war is over, move back to Guam. And so he obeys the tug on his heart, and he moves to Guam with his wife, and he becomes a school teacher. And he teaches at the schools there, and he starts Pacific Ocean Mission, which they rented out films. From there, he had an outreach to Filipino migrant workers, Filipino workers who were there on the island, and they started the First Church of God on Guam. Now, where the church is located, right across the street, there was a house. And there was a young lady who attended that house. And she decided to go to the church and try the church out. Well, she does, and she likes the church. And she invites a friend from school. So her friend from school goes to the church, and she likes the church, and she prays to receive Christ. Well, that friend then invites her brother to church. And that brother was me. And it was in the summer of 75 that my sister invited me to go to First Church of God in Barragata on Guam. And so it's this coincidence, this fate, this chance that God is working in our lives and stuff like that. You see, that is exactly what the world wants us to believe about such events in our lives, that it's all just luck. Many would have us believe such things as fatalism. Fatalism is the view that all things are determined by an untouchable law of cause and effect. In other words, fate. How about deism? The idea that God created the world and then he withdrew from its day-to-day operations. How about dualism? The very idea of two opposing forces in the universe that are locked into a struggle to gain control over it. As Christians, is that what we believe life comes down to? Listen to this. An order of fate by an uncaring higher power, who is struggling to gain control of the universe. Is that, as Christians, what we believe life comes down to? Let me say it again without messing it up this time, hopefully. An order of fate by an uncaring higher power who is struggling to gain control of the universe. But you know what? The book of Ruth and the rest of the Bible, it has something different to say about the everyday events and circumstances we happen to find ourselves in. It is called God's providential care. Do you know how many times the word coincidence or any other word like that appears in the Bible? None. Not one event in all of Scripture is ever spoken of as having been coincidental. So we begin by answering the question, who would have ever imagined or dreamed a Sunday school teacher leading a young man to Christ would have such an impact both now and eternally? And the answer is God. God would have dreamed it. God would have imagined it. If providence meaning to see and know in advance, we can conclude that God saw in advance what impact Mr. Kimball would have by leading a young man to Christ. Proverbs 16:9. A man's heart plans his ways, but the Lord directs his steps. As Ruth was gleaning in the field of Boaz, as we read in chapter 2, I want us to glean from the same chapter today some truths concerning God and his providential care. The first thing is God's providential care allows us to go on. Ruth, verses 2 and 3. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself, it just happened, working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Think about this scene with me for a moment. Here you have Ruth, who is now a widow. She has left her homeland of Moab to move into a country to which she would be viewed as a stranger, a foreigner, and an outsider. And her mother-in-law, who is also a widow, has given up, thinking that the hand of God is against her. Ruth, however, is not inclined to just sit and lick her wounds. She knew that they had to eat, and that meant she would have to go work in the fields as a gleaner. And that she did. There is a great deception in the midst of God's church today. It's called, always have to be blowing and going. If it isn't, then God is not in it. And I know at times I kind of get caught into it, and you'll see, we always have to be doing something. In my mind, I'm saying, we have to be doing something great. We always have to be on the move. We always have to be, as a church, doing something that's going to attract people. But isn't it interesting that God, who can move mountains, raise people from the dead, heal the sick and the lame, give sight to the blind, provide miraculous feedings, and even raise his own son from the dead, he chooses to do most of his work in the quiet, very normal, everyday events and happenings in our lives. See, behind the scenes of Naomi and Ruth, God was quietly at work. Henry Blackaby states that God is always at work around us, even if we don't see him. In fact, one of the most interesting definitions of coincidence that I was able to come across is this. Listen, coincidence is a small miracle where God prefers to remain anonymous. I believe it is called a trust factor. The very fact that Ruth was with Naomi, having given up her own, and was now going to go to work, showed that she trusted God. So, Ruth was in the shadow of the Almighty. The Apostle Paul knew this trust factor in his own life. In 2 Timothy 1:12, he says, that is why I am suffering as I am. Yet I am not ashamed, because I know whom I have believed, and am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him for that day. See, providence is God's faithful and effective care and guidance of everything which he has made toward the end, which he has chosen. Ruth just happening to come into the field of Boaz was not chance or luck. It was by God's design and providential care. Many of the stories that we've shared today, that's not luck or chance. That is God's providential care. That is God leading and guiding and directing. God knew what he was doing way back then, and he still knows what he is doing in your life and my life today. I must say then that there is an opposite side to this story. Many people, like Naomi, become bitter, and they become swelled with this cynical view. They might ask questions like, why is God doing this to me? What have I done to deserve this? The cynic never trusts anyone, much less God. The challenge for us, then, is to see that God is behind the scenes working for our best. Romans 8:28 says, and we know that all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Few, if any of us, escape illness, loss of income, death of a loved one, pressures of job and family, loneliness, injustices, or any of the many other thorns in this life. The point is not that following Christ will exempt one from trouble or pain. What it does provide is the assurance of God's presence in the midst of the stormy tempests of life. Genesis 28, 15 and 16. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. To know and trust that God is with you in the very place you find. The second thing that we can glean from this is God's providential care allows us to care. Cynicism breeds carelessness. The cynic's second favorite line is, I don't care. And the first is, I don't believe that. Today we might just say, whatever. See, we are living in a world much like the dark days of the judges in Ruth's time, to which everyone is doing whatever is right in their own eyes. But out of the darkness of the day comes two shining examples of how we are to live our life under God's providential care. The first one is Boaz. As a kinsman to Ruth's husband Mahlon, Boaz was by law required to care for her. And he could have sighed and begrudgingly allowed Ruth to glean from his fields. But Boaz, who is a man of integrity and loyalty to God, in the midst of these dark times, sees an opportunity to express his thankfulness to God for his gracious care shown in his own life. Listen to how he greets the workers in his field. The Lord be with you. When he shows up, he says to them, the Lord be with you. It shows that he is sterling. He is deeply in love with God. It was not a cliche. How could we know that it wasn't a cliche? Because of the kindness and care that he shows to Ruth, who is a foreigner and a stranger. Listen to these examples. Boaz allows Ruth to glean more than just the extra. In verses 8, 15, and 16, he lets her get more than just the gleaning there. You see, God never has us live off the residue of his love. His love is there for us. We don't get the table scraps. We don't get the leftovers. His love is for us. Boaz gives Ruth protection in verse 9. God at times hedges us in and protects us. In verse 9, the second half, Boaz provides Ruth with water for her thirst. And the final one in verse 14, Boaz feeds Ruth from his own table. God's providential care has been showered upon Boaz, and now Boaz is willing to allow God to use him to show care for another person. Another sterling example of the light in the midst of the darkness is Ruth. Verse 14 says, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. She carried it back to town. I'm at verse 18 now. I skipped to there. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Ruth could have become selfish, having just hit the jackpot of sorts, and thought only of herself. She could have easily forgotten about her bitter mother-in-law who was at home. She could have focused on Boaz, who was the gift giver, and she could have lost sight of who she was, who was an outsider. But I believe that Ruth loved God with her whole heart, her whole being. And that allowed her then to return and help take care of Naomi. Verses 11 and 12. Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you have left your father and mother and homeland and come to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." God wants to teach us that we who recognize his providential care must be willing to go to those who are bitter with life and show them all about this care that God has for us. Tell me that we have not lost our ability to care. Have we lost sight of who we are? We are strangers and an alien who God has taken in. The very truth that he providentially cares for us should lead us deeper into a life of caring for other people. The third thing that we can glean from all this is that God's providential care allows us to humble ourselves. Verse 10 says, "At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, 'Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?'" There's something very important to remember here about Ruth. Not only was she a foreigner, but she was a native of Moab. And if you're not familiar with Israelite history, Moab was one of those countries, as the Israelites were trying to get to the promised land, Moab was a country that refused to allow them safe passage into the promised land. Ruth knew that she would not be well received in this new land because of her heritage. But you know what? She was willing to risk it all to follow God. The average person does not always understand what it means to be in need. And we fail to appreciate the grace of God. But Ruth, who is falling on her face, she demonstrates a great act of humility and respect for the kindness shown to her by Boaz. She was hurting inside. She was hungry and alone. And this act of care and compassion by Boaz was too much for her. And she fell down in 100% humility. Are we a humble people? Or has the world crept into our hearts and seared the humility which we once had? Have we become prideful and arrogant? I'm afraid that many of us may have responded like this. Listen, "Hey, I'm a relative of yours, and by marriage and by law, you have to let me glean. Hey, you can't tell me where to glean or where not to glean. I'll do as I please." How about something along this line? "Hey, I am poor, and you owe it to me because you are rich." You can change those around a little bit. Many of us respond like that. Keep in mind and heart that Ruth is modeling for us what we should be. Ruth is here in the scripture not for some nice story to tell, but her life is for our admonition, for us to look at, for us to review, for us to follow after. Have we spent any time down on our faces lately in 100% submission and humility to God? If not, let me take you back to the time that you confessed and believed in Jesus Christ. Is it not at the point of our confession and belief that we finally understand that we were a foreigner to God's grace? And all we could do was humbly bow before Him, admitting our inability to do anything about our sinful condition. Sometimes, confessing our sins to Christ is one of the hardest things to do, because we have to admit that we need forgiveness. Listen to Ruth in verse 10 again, the second half. Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? What has happened in our lives that turns us from the act of humility before God? Evan Baltz said this: human arrogance and pride and the desire for self-determination often blocks those words from our lips and our hearts and our minds. James 4:10 says this: humble yourselves before the Lord and He will lift you up. 1 Peter 5:6-7. Humble yourselves therefore under God's mighty hand, that He may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety on Him because He cares for you. You see, after examining the second chapter of the book of Ruth, can we look at our lives, events, and say, that was just coincidence? No, as we've seen in the life of Ruth, there is no happenstance. God is at work in our lives through His providential care, meaning that God has already looked into this day, today, and He has what you and what I are in need of. He is working in today's events to provide for you. So don't miss it. Let me close with this. Listen to this. Ruth, verse 13 says, and this is Ruth talking, may I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have given me much comfort.